This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Step into the arena. Give it all that you got. Into the arena.
It's time to make it your best shot. Chase the dream and break the scene. Your opportunity is right here. It's right here. It's right now. Welcome to my arena.
This is the maiden voyage of the podcast In the Arena, and I'm thrilled to have Chris Brogan as my first guest. Chris is a New York Times best-selling author, and for my money, he's the best in the business when it comes to building a community by creating value. He's also a co-conspirator of mine on a couple projects, and he's a really good friend. Here, I talk to Chris about his new book, The Impact Equation, and about what you can do to build your platform now.
Chris, how are you?
I'm the very best, and you?
I am wonderful. And you and I never, ever speak without immediately turning straight away to business, and this will be no different. And I want to start here with you and your new book, The Impact Equation. You've written this book. It's a follow-up or a follow-on to Trust Agents. And I want to ask you, so you wrote Trust Agents a few years later now. You've got some new distinctions that you've made. You've got some new ideas. What have you noticed that made you write The Impact Equation?
Well, in 2009, Julian Smith and I wrote this book called The Trust Agents, and we wrote it to say, you know, there's this way that you could try to be human at a distance, and one way that you could do that would be, you know, using something like the social web. It wasn't a book about the social web, but we used that to sort of paint with because it was a very fresh and vibrant tool. And we said, so you could really learn how to be human and that would change the way your business is running. And people flocked to the social web, did nothing kind of like what we recommended, and then everyone sort of showed up. And so in 2012, we wrote a book called The Impact Equation to say, okay, this isn't about the social web either. This is about how do you get your information heard and seen and cared for by a platform of value. And it just so happens that the social web might still be the tool, or it even might not. But, you know, we found some attributes that we thought we could share with people to say, now that everyone's there, how do you stand out?
That's interesting. And in sales, we have the same sort of curse in that if we say there's a new tool, then the tool's a substitute for the outcome. And what I hear you saying is that with Trust Agents, it wasn't about the tools, and it's still not about the tools. It's still about how do you be human and how do you make a difference and stand out. You start the book with a central premise that you and I have talked about a couple times, and really this is a big theme for you in your writing and in your work, especially around bravery, and it's the central idea of permission and picking yourself. Tell me what you mean by picking yourself and bravery and giving yourself permission. And tell me why you start the book with that point.
Well, one of the things I think that people don't do very well is claim their own crown. And that is, you know, give themselves permission to be the owner of whatever they need to do or whatever they need to be. And so I think that in starting the book out, one of the things we did with this was we said, you know, before we even talk about how to make an idea stand out, we need to talk to you about your goals and how to make sure your goals are what you want them to be and all that. So there was a little bit of conditioning for people to say, let's really just go through what your goals mean and what they matter to you and whatnot. And then let's talk about how to make an idea stand out. And then let's talk about how to build a platform where people can see it, etc. Part of that is, you know, claiming permission, taking permission for yourself, just kind of, you know, as you and I said at one time, finding your superpower of flight and being able to fly because you don't have to wait for someone to tell you. So to me, it's just a matter of, making sure people have that mindset before they go to the next one.
Yeah, and this toolkit, the social web, and the acronym that you came up with for the impact equation all lend themselves, but not until you go ahead and take that step and decide this is where I'm going and who I'm going to be to do that. And let me set you up just with a couple questions about the impact equation. And I know in my view, people are concerned about reach and exposure, which is R&E and create. But a couple of the other ones I think are more compelling and more interesting. Probably the first one for me is the C with contrast. And maybe because I'm a sales guy and maybe because I have this worldview of things, everything looks like a sales problem to me. This idea of differentiation is so important. And in the book, you write about marketing speak and calling contrast the unique sales proposition. and it's how we differentiate ourselves and our offering. Tell me about an example of see in contrast, and what does that mean for people who are looking to figure out how do they differentiate themselves and their offering in their space?
So a lot of times with contrast, when people try to talk about their unique service proposition, they tend to look at their enemy and sort of line it up against their enemy. And one of my examples of contrast that I like to give that's not in the book, but I give in speeches, is Dollar Shave Club. Now, they're a U.S.-based company, and the premise is fairly simple. A dollar a month will send you a razor. And their enemy, obviously, is somebody like Gillette. And so what they say in their ad is that we have $1 and $5, and I think they might have an $8 razor. And they said what we don't have are $10 and $15 and $20 razors with vibrating handles and things to jettison, you know, foam all over your face and all that. And the reason we keep our costs down is that we are not paying for stadiums and ads and things like that. So it's an underdog story. So the way that they can compete is, of course, say, we're the little guy. It's interesting how a lot of times companies, salespeople, professionals, small business owners all tie themselves against the big guy and quite often try to say, we're just like the big guy. Whereas I think there's a lot of value in showing people why it's cool that you're the little guy. So that's one way to look at it. The importance about trying to think of contrast is how can I make myself a little bit different than someone else? But it's got to be something further than a gimmick. I find, you know, when somebody asked me once about branding, they were saying, you know, I wear the same shirt. It's a blue shirt. I bought six of them. It's the same color blue as my website. Aren't I branded? And I said, no, like no one wants to think of you as the blue shirt guy. Oprah Winfrey didn't brand herself as a big circular O. She's a woman who stands for a lot of different things. So I guess one of the other big points about contrast is it's never supposed to be a gimmick. It's just supposed to be, you know, you're a guy who talks about leadership and also sales. I'm a guy who talks about community and also business and marketing. So it's kind of like that.
Yeah, and you know, to me, I think for sales organizations and for anybody that would be listening to this podcast, your differentiation has to be a difference that makes a difference for your client. And so what you do with Dollar Shave is they're saying, it's not that we're smaller, it's that because we're smaller, we can serve you better. You never have to think about razor blades again. They show up right at your house, and you're not paying for advertising and for the middleman. And that's the difference that makes a difference. It can't be that my hair is blue, although that will make you stand out. Your example in the book is, you know, if you're a punk band, everybody in your world looks the same, and rebellion would be to do something different than that. So it has to be a difference that makes a difference. Let me take you through a couple other, two more of these. I know we get to reach and exposure because everybody wants to look at their cloud score, their cred score, their Twitter followers. I had a tough time, though, with Echo. First, I had a tough time sort of understanding what Echo was. And I learned a lot about Echo from watching and emulating you, so it took me a while to catch on to what you were saying with that, but I get it. And in my mind, your newsletter is the perfect example of Echo. Share what Echo means and give me an example of somebody who's getting Echo right.
So Echo, for instance, is do I see myself in you? Echo is the chapter that I think we probably did the worst job writing, I guess, because that's the one that most people ask us questions about, by the way, out and about. They'll say, you know, I seem to get most of these, but what's Echo? The point is, so now I've told you stand out and be different. You know, what makes me very different than some other company or something like that? Well, Echo is, do I see myself in you? And one of the really common things I love to say about sales is we buy from people that we like, and we tend to buy from people that we think are like us. We like having the same worldview around us. We like that sense that this person is similar to me in some way. And so with the concept of Echo, you're looking for how do you do something that makes you relate to other people. One of my favorite examples, and I think this is also in the book, is Adele, the singer Adele. When I watched her play live at the Royal Albert Hall, she was on the stage, thousands of people, and in between every song, she would talk to people as if she was talking to one person or a couple of girlfriends out at a drink. And the feeling was so intimate. And again, remember, thousands of people, the Albert Hall, this is a famous place that, you know, the Beatles have played and all these kinds of folks. And she's very personable. You know, contrast to the, you know, any old band that's out there screaming, "Hello, Cleveland." And, you know, you just know that they're the kind of people who only refer to the people in the audience as their fans. You know, they have this huge platform above those people. And that's really, you know, not the way to go for it. So I just think the real opportunity is to understand in what ways can you make yourself seem like the kind of person that people need to know about. And there's a ton of ways to do it, Anthony. It's just a matter of in which way can you make yourself be known to that other person.
Do you have to be vulnerable to do this? I mean, do you have to let a little bit of your guard down? And I think about salespeople, and we want to be so professional, and we're sitting across. And there's this mistake about rapport, meaning that you're likable, when really it more reflects the idea that we're alike. And I see that in this idea echo. But do you sort of have to let your guard down and be real and let people in to create that kind of echo?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a really great thing to ask about. We were taught, all of us were taught, that, you know, you've got to be tough, you've got to be thick-skinned, you know, especially in sales. I mean, sales is the business of being told no all the time, and you've got to pick yourself up, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that with regards to the idea of being vulnerable, I'm going to go gender here for a second. Males tend to look at vulnerability as double worse most times, you know, because, you know, that means I'm not strong enough, I can't provide. There's all this stuff that gets attached to the phrase vulnerability. Now, the difference is if you talk about, you know, one of the things that you're a bit vulnerable around and it's not something weird. I mean, there is what I call the Perez Hilton hot mess line. You know, there's the, there's this whole thing where you don't want to say stuff that's just wide open, weird and unrelatable and that people aren't going to want to, you know, deal with. But I mean, for instance, if you're, let's just say you're at an opportunity to have a conversation and maybe it's a sales meeting like you tend to get into, and the other person says something like, you know, well, I just don't even understand how this thing works for me. And you say, well, take me, for instance, I'm bad at math, you know. Even just kind of admitting to something like being bad at math might be every bit of an opening that the person needs to say, hey, that's weird, me too. I find that, you know, any of these times where we kind of share some piece of us that's not, you know, mission critical, it's not going to kill anybody.
It's interesting, even when it is mission critical, I think in a sales opportunity, you know, I tend to be completely honest and it's always served me well. And I tend to tell clients that we always get everything right, you know, after the third try. And they laugh and say, yeah, us too. You know, getting good results is difficult. And admitting that it's going to take work tends to generate trust. And pretending that it doesn't take work tends to generate, you know, some sort of a disconnect. Because if it's easy, then they would have already done it before you showed up.
Absolutely.
And vulnerability, it just seems to me we don't want to be that. And I see some of that in Echo. Let me keep you on this for just one more quick question. In your newsletter, in my mind, that's Echo. You are so real and so personable. How many email responses do you give to a Sunday newsletter, and how many do you respond to?
So at the time of this, I am just approaching about 25,000 subscribers on my list. And in the very first day, the usual opening number is around 4,000 or so. And then that doubles over the next couple days because not everybody reads it right on Sunday. Out of that 4,000 or so, 4,900 and something actually is what it is. The number of people who responded on last Sunday's email happened to be around 400 or so. And so what the experience of getting 400 emails is, you know, you could just do some really quick math, and I already admitted that I was bad at math, so this might be really hard, but if you do 400 emails times 5 minutes, that's 2,000 minutes. And then you divide that by 60. And if I took just 5 minutes to respond back, that should be about 33 and a third hours of my time. Now, I do it anyway. And I can tell you that it does not take me 33 hours to do all my responses. But I will say that most people who are responding to me, first off, half of them think it's still not me. And as many times as I say it's me, I can include a photo of me waving with their name in it, and they probably still wouldn't believe it. You know, a lot of business guys say to me, well, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Why would you do that? And I'm like, why wouldn't I want to invite conversations to prospects?
Yeah. And you're very real and very connected with your audience. I'm one of them, and I know. So last question. this book, in my mind, is in some ways really about platform. And that's one of my three words for 2013. You say this in the book, build the platform before you need the platform. And you say, even though you may not think you need a platform right now, you may not realize why a channel is important. You may think that you don't have a message. Why should you take part of this? And I say this because I know this will be listened to by salespeople, and they work for a company, and they think of themselves that the company should have a platform, and the company thinks they don't need a platform. But what would you recommend? Why would a platform be important to an individual, even an individual that's working inside a company, working for somebody else?
Salespeople of Earth, we have all watched Glengarry Glen Ross. We all know what it's like to be the Jack Lemmon character sitting around depressed, wishing that we had the Glengarry leads and just figuring that we're just turning up bad leads on our own and that, you know, there's a conspiracy against us. If you are waiting for the company to do all the marketing for you and you're waiting for the company to be your voice and do the platform, you are Jack Lemmon sitting at that desk waiting for the Glengarry leads. I'm Alec Baldwin, and I'm here to tell you that what you need to do is be closing. And in this case, the closing starts at making content. And what do I mean by that? You've got to make something happen where you're not even writing about the product. Doesn't even have to be about the product. What you want to write to are what kinds of things are on the minds of your prospects. Now, depending on what the product is, it might be really easy. If you sell luxury sailboats, you know what's on the minds of your prospects. They're worried about the fiscal cliff. They're worried about what taxes are like in the U.S. They're worried about whatever. And then you're talking also about leisure stuff. Maybe you don't want to write about the bad things. Maybe you only want to write about the things that only rich people who travel can afford. And then what you're looking at is you're trying to come up with information and content that draws people into something before the sale. This is the coolest thing about this whole social networking junk. It is like free mind reading. It is absolutely like free mind reading because people can start picking your brain and reading your mind, and you can start searching around online and see what people are asking for that your tool or product or service or whatever can be the solution for. And so to me, that's the whole reason to get involved in this. And that's why to start a platform now, because if you're not working on building your platform, that's like saying, I'm not working on a sales list because I don't have a product to sell. You know, it's great to have networking long before you have a product to sell, because then by the time you're ready to ask for something, you've put so much value into your community that they're dying to help you out.
I think that's an important point that you make. This idea of platform, you know, they are, and all salespeople, they're their own brand, and you're recognized as a value creator, and you're recognized as somebody who has ideas, and there is no better toolkit than this toolkit. And I recommend Impact Equation. It will definitely give you a framework for thinking about this. Chris, thanks so much for your time. Before you leave, give us the link for the newsletter. That's the most important thing. If you leave here and do anything, sign up for Chris's newsletter and read it every Sunday. It will absolutely help you think about these ideas. Where do they go?
Thank you so much for that. Where do they go is hbway.com. H like human, B like business, way, way.com/NL for newsletter. And it's really easy to sign up. Just throw your first name or whatever in there, send your email address, and we'll confirm you. And it shows up every Sunday morning. If you don't want to read it on Sunday, don't. You can read it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Can't read it Saturday. It just is illegal in most states.
You're going to want to read it Sunday. It's worth waking up to. And I feel like it's having a conversation with Chris. Chris, thanks so much for joining me here on the maiden voyage of this podcast.
I am so glad to be here, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for spending your time here with me. If you want more ideas like these, you could join me at www.thesalesblog.com, where I write and post every day. You can also sign up for my weekly newsletter at www.thesalesblog.com/newsletter. That's what I've got for you this week. See you next week right here in the arena.